Off the Ball Breakfast.
You would say George's.
Did I say that? You said that. You literally said that.
That's what
George's is slightly better competition.
Your eyes just told me that. I'm just translating it.
Wow. Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Cullen Buhig and Dara Smith-Nocton are in studio. Good morning, lads. How are things?
Dara and Shane, good morning. I'm a big sartorial fan, as you both know. You know, I like this number from Dara there over in the corner. A lot going on, two different prime colours and a bit of graffiti on it too.
Yeah,
but you must have been listening to yesterday's show. No, sure you were.
Of course, as always. But continue.
Love the navy number.
Yeah,
talking about the lack of teams playing in navy as a first choice colour in sport,
as in jerseys, right?
Yeah, it took over YouTube yesterday morning. I've never seen the likes of it. There were suggestions coming in left and right, like the likes of Bordeaux, Scotland. I was thinking about overnight, Seattle Seahawks in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
So you were just making the point that there's not that many of them in Navy.
It's an underused colour. And it's it all stemmed from the whole fiasco here between Meath and Donegal this weekend, that they'll be clashing. But there's an option, of course, for Meath to wear Navy, and they haven't.
I'd be leaning into that. There is something a bit powerful about a Navy. Yeah. And also the fact that I think on a day like this, I was just checking their column, the temperatures are going to reach 27 degrees today in Dublin.
There's a yellow warning.
So you'd have to wear shorts into work, presumably, on a day like that. Do you know, like, you're obviously wearing shorts, and I'm wearing shorts today
obviously,
as well.
Yeah.
Dara, you were in recently, and it was about 15 degrees out, and you had shorts on, and today, at 27 degrees, you thought, do you know what, I'm not going to wear shorts today.
It's too mainstream now, like.
So whatever,
shorts aren't cool anymore.
Whatever is expected.
Yeah.
So in the winter, you come in shorts.
Exactly.
See, it's the young... We just don't understand, Cullen, that it's the young hipster method. It's just the way they go on, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's a man who follows his own path. What can I say? It's freeing, actually. There's a different vibe now, straight away.
Yeah, you feel different?
It's different.
Yeah.
There's so much air down here.
That's true. Yeah,
it's usually stuffy.
Yeah, it's an air-conditioned studio. It's fantastic. There's plenty to look forward to this weekend. Keep it clean, says Arthur into your ear as well. Don't know if you heard that, but it's the advice from the producer. Yeah, exactly.
What was dirty about that?
Nothing. Just, I suppose he could have gone somewhere, couldn't he?
I want to see how long more I can keep you on this topic.
Potentially, yeah. We can move. Look, there's plenty that's been happening. You know, there's plenty that's been happening in the news in the newspapers.
Well, you could talk about...
What would you like to talk about?
Well, there's absolutely loads. So we'll do...
We should start...
We're going to do... Ben Healy.
Yes, well, that's where we should start.
Yeah, and we'll do Christian O'Hanlon too, but Ebby Lawson was a ball girl at Wimbledon 10 years ago.
I'd say being a ball boy at Wimbledon was your dream job growing up.
How does that work?
It's the author boy of tennis, isn't it?
It is.
Be a player or the priest.
Can you rogue apply to it, or is it like clubs?
I know so far, through
school.
More about this, all of us collectively, everyone, in about 2 hours' time. Mm-hmm. But all I know is that it's as competitive as playing. There are rankings, and there are top boys, ball boys and ball girls. There are top ones.
So you have to graft it out at the lower events.
You've got to prove yourself.
Jeez.
Yeah.
We'll ask KB about this, but apparently you're ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 after each game that you do. So 5 being great performance, 4 being all right.
Yeah.
And then that determines
Technique? Is it as quickly as you get the ball back? Is it focus?
And rolling the ball on the ground, not as easy as it... As it looks, I don't think. In a straight line at distance. Do you know, you think, I'll just roll a tennis ball along the ground. Easy. It's not that easy of pressure.
Have a look now, right? No. So today you'll have two chances. The men's semi-finals are today at Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. And have a look at how focused and...
Some of the best of the best out there today.
No, ignore the tennis. Look at the ball boys and ball girls. Mm. They're never off duty.
True.
And these things can go for like potentially 5 hours.
Yeah.
So you're not really watching the game, are you? If you're a ball... Boy or girl,
you're watching the balls.
You're sticking to your
can you really enjoy tennis if you're these are all questions we can ask.
That's true. You're not really watching the matches.
I think we're sleeping on this segment really. Someone who was a ball girl at Wimbledon in the modern history of Wimbledon played like ball girling on centre court. Incredible.
I know it's different to being a mascot. It's because you're actually involved in the game itself, but it's more like a ball boy in football. But were you ever a mascot? I remember being a mascot for Monaghan United versus Celtic under 23s, I think it was a friendly back when I was probably about 10, and I got to take a penalty at half time, but it was one of the the American style penalties where you run up from the halfway line with the ball. It's 1v1.
Yeah,
just always stuck with me. What a moment, what a great moment.
An Ireland underage game at Turner's Cross got to wear an FAI or whatever branded tracksuit. It was class, but I had to give it back after.
Oh, that's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I ever was, no.
No?
No.
More of a player.
Just wanted to play, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't want to be out there.
Fair enough. Yeah. You've mentioned a column already. Ben Healy. Dara, you were keeping track of this yesterday. So
yeah, Ben Healy, yeah.
What an achievement. The news kind of broke yesterday afternoon. He claimed his first Tour de France stage. And quite an impressive way to do it as well. So he follows in the footsteps of Shea Elliott, Sean Kelly, Stephen Roach, Martin Early, Dan Martin, and Sam Bennett.
Yeah.
As we were saying this morning, Eddie Dunbar as well finished fourth, so we shouldn't forget that.
Yeah.
But like, what a performance from Healy.
Yeah, unbelievable, really. And it's the context of how he won it as well. I think it's one of those stages where you would have earmarked him to be a contender. But as it turned out, just about everyone in the peloton wanted to win yesterday because he really, really had to fight to make that front group in the breakaway. You riders like Simon Yates up there, who's just won a Grand Tour, competing to the very end. So he took he attacked that group once he got into it, about 42k to go. So it's a long way to go by yourself, and no one was able to follow him. And he had some serious riders behind chasing him. The US champion Eddie Dunbar, obviously, in the chase group as well. But he stuck it out. It was really, really unbelievable performance. And we were kind of updating ourselves as it went on through teams. And it was just like, it was just brilliant to watch. Like, and it feels like it's been a long time. Like, it's only been 5 years since we've had a stage winner in Sam Bennett. But Sam Bennett is a completely different type of rider in which you'll only see him at the front for 500 metres because he's a sprinter. But it's been a long, long time since we've had someone to stick it out for 40k. You're looking at Dan Martin even before that. It's just great to see. Like, it's not his first Grand Tour stage, but Tour de France, it just has that something about it that, you know, it's special. It's what riders dream of growing up, like, you know.
So it's stamina for Healy as opposed to Bennett's?
It's stamina, it's power as well. So Bennett has pure strength and power, and he has the acceleration, whereas Healy, it's stamina and it's endurance. And it's also, there's a lot of tactics behind it as well. Whereas Bennett's job is basically to stick it behind his lead out rider and just go flat out for 500 metres. Whereas Healy has a lot of work to do himself. That's not discrediting what Sam Bennett's done, obviously, but Ben Healy has a lot of thinking to do and when he's going to attack. Sean Kelly and some of the other commentators were talking about at the time, but he's so meticulous in how he plans his stages. Like, he'll think about which helmet he should wear, whether he should wear overshoes before a race, what type of bike he's using, because he knows in his head what he needs to do to win a stage. So I don't expect this to be his last win at a Grand Tour, and probably not Tour de France either. Like, he's not going to win the whole thing. He's not that type of rider, but
it's not about that for him.
This is as good as it gets for that type of rider.
Is this, for the world of cycling, a surprising victory?
No. He's well known around or in cycling circles as a guy who's dangerous on these stages.
Mm-hmm.
When EF, his team, announced their squad for the Tour de France, I saw a comment underneath that was like, this is just a super team of stage hunters, because he is one of these guys that will circle four or five stages every Grand Tour and be like, I'm going to win that.
Yeah.
He's not going to win all of them, but he might win one. And when he does, it's special. Like, it's brilliant.
He's eighth in general classification.
He is. I don't expect him to stay in the top 10 unless he decides, right, I'm not going for any stages anymore. I'm just going to try and put out the best time every single day that I can.
Mm.
I don't know what his ambitions would be. I would imagine he'd be more inclined to go after another stage, like Eddie Dunbar in the Vuelta last year, as opposed to trying to focus on GC. But it's really, really beneficial for Irish cycling, like, to have a stage winner again at the Tour de France.
How so, beyond the obvious of it's great that we have an Irish winner? Where does the benefit come from?
It's, well, we've a lot of young riders coming up that will get good placings in random races.
Because it is.
I'm saying, like, we will get good results across the board in the calendar year. But it's seeing someone being able to win a Tour de France stage is like, oh yeah, we're still up there, Irish cycling. Like, because we're obviously not in the days of Sean Kelly and Stephen Roach anymore, but when you have two Irish riders in the top five of what people are calling the toughest stage in Tour de France so far, like, you can't discredit us as a cycling nation, you know?
There's also, like, you could see the heat, you could see the you know, the shimmering of the heat off the tarmac yesterday. And it's kind of like the fact that he was able to do it in those conditions makes it all the more remarkable. Like, and to pull away with what, as you said, 40 odd K,
yeah. And it was the final that we basically were celebrating for about 10K out because he had built about 2 minutes or so of a lead. And in cycling, that's extremely steep with 10 kilometers. It's like that'll never be closed. It's too much. But the final kilometer was, I think it was the steepest climb of the day. It was ridiculous. And I can't say it on air, but the camera that was in his face after he won the stage picked him up saying, geez, that climb made me work for it here, because he kind of had an easy run in, but then at the very end it was like, right, you're going to have to work for this now. You're not done yet. It's just great to watch as a cycling fan, and especially as an Irish cycling fan.
What can't you say?
I used the F word in that sentence.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's a quote.
It's brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Looking here, there's a moment during the race over the Côte de Mortain where Dunbar and Healy are first and second. Apparently the first time two Irish riders have led over a Tour de France climb since Kelly and Roach on the Col du Mesquite in 85. So like images like that, even what they do for Irish cycling, to have those two lads at the very pinnacle is just, it's something else.
Yeah. Like, I'm not old enough to remember Kelly and Roach, obviously, but I know a lot of Irish cycling fans that would be, and I'm sure that was a special day yesterday, and you get memories of those two lads dominating in Grand Tours around Europe. That's brilliant, and hopefully we see more of it, because Dunbar himself, he might not get talked about today, or didn't get talked about too much yesterday, but he's a brilliant rider as well. He's a bit older, he's 28, Ben Healy's 24, but he's a lot ahead of him as well. He's two Grand Tour stages already.
What's the prime age? Like Pogacar is what age?
Pogacar, I think he's 25.
26,
like, yeah. 26, yeah. So it's changed a lot in cycling. It used to be kind of, you know, kind of late 20s, early 30s, most sports. But now it's kind of changed in that you have a guy like Pogacar, Remco Evenepoel, who people remember as the Olympic road race winner there recently. He's another contender for Tour de France. So it is getting younger as a sport. And Ben Healy is one of those examples where he has no problem going up against those lads who have been cycling a lot longer than him. You know?
The bounce pass at the serve would be tricky, I'd say, says Roy Larmer. The pressure would be unreal. That's in relation to...
I think that's easier than the roll.
I don't know about that. Like the pressure, everyone's looking at you. P174 has one for us there. The toughest sports people in the world, are they cyclists?
Cyclists and boxers are probably up there.
Yeah.
Mixed martial artists, obviously, as well.
Well, yeah. I guess the question is, really, within P. Wells, overall musing is what defines toughest? Does it mean endurance and stamina? You know, you could argue, a Rory McIlroy at the Masters, that was mentally grueling.
Mm.
Yeah.
Snooker players require severe mental
darts.
We're not darts. Snooker.
Darts. Have you ever?
Mental toughness.
Have you ever darted in a competition?
No.
Yeah.
You can start going.
Yeah.
Serving it out at Wimbledon.
Swimming will be up there. I think long distance swimming.
At least in swimming, you're in your own world because you're underwater.
Running obviously is up there as well.
But at least when you're on the bike, you have oxygen, whereas humans can't breathe underwater.
Oh, so you're going back to the physical there and swimming.
Yeah.
That's my question. What makes you can define tough in so many different ways?
I think cycling encapsulates it all, though. Like it's because think about it, Healy's out there 40 kilometers by himself. Someone in his ear being like, "You cannot stop, keep going," and he's in the red the whole way. Like he's tired.
Can he hear?
That's annoying advice.
See if team radio in his ear.
That's annoying advice.
Yeah, he'll have his director sportif in his ear.
Right. Okay.
Giving him advice. Like he's not just shouting at him, obviously, but he's giving him advice and
keep pedaling, Ben.
Yeah,
you're nearly there.
Like that's literally the advice you're going to be getting in that, because they can't tell you much more. Ben Healy knows more than most people about cycling. Like so, but in terms of physicality, it's obviously up there with the toughest in the world. The Tour de France, you know, you're 21 days of grueling, 150 to 200k of cycling every single day. You only have two rest days in between, and you have to finish every day as well. It's not a thing of like if you crash, I can take this one, I'll come back tomorrow. You have to cross the line at the end,
right,
or you're gone.
It's not like Formula One where you can DNF.
You have to finish. So, and then mentally, like you spend so much time by yourself. Like it's obviously a team sport to an extent, but it's not really. You're out there by yourself a lot, you know. If it's something you don't see, is Ben Healy, he cycled in the Dauphiné, which is kind of a week-long tour for the warm-up for the Tour de France. He got dropped off the back a lot. He wasn't in his best form, but things you don't see is he'll be off the back for 100K, whatever it is, for the rest of the race. That is so difficult, like.
Mm.
To be by yourself and you know you're way behind, to keep going physically and mentally, it's just, I don't know, I don't think anything really compares. The long distance running is kind of similar.
You've convinced, I think you've convinced me. Cyclists are the toughest athletes.
Who? Bewell did?
In the world. Check the live docs, says Arthur.
I'd say
no need to placate every sports person. Nail colours to the mast. Yeah. Cross country skiing.
Proven
to be
Darren Corcoran says that cross country skiing is proven. Proven.
I read
to be
out the part I wasn't supposed to read out yet. Very good. Nail our colours to the mast, basically.
And it's a long distance. It's difficult. Long distance swimming as well.
Cross country skiing, like
you're using a lot of muscles in your body. In fairness, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You really are.
How is it proven to be the toughest?
Well, yeah, that's the word proven there, Dara. I'm not sure. Not you, Dara, but Dara on YouTube. Yeah, Ironman competition, says Dermot, have to be grueling, but that's obvious.
Motorsport's difficult. Very difficult.
Yeah.
I'll go marathon runner. As in long distance running. Yeah. Because it's not just in event, right? You have to look after yourself outside of it too.
So do cyclists.
They all do, but to an extent, marathon have to look after themselves in every single way, right? So they can't eat or drink anything
that's going to affect
them at all, right?
Mm. That's the same.
I get away, you can hide in a team sport a little. So that is like, you have to live so cleanly all the time and dedicate yourself entirely to it. And in lots of cases, you're probably under your natural weight.
Mm. The bodies, bodies of a long-distance runner and a cyclist are
It'd be very similar,
as would be the case for a jockey.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd probably jockey have someone else doing most of the work.
It depends how the question's been. We talk about pro, like, are we saying, like, if you are an elite professional who has the toughest job, like, I think it's cyclist. Running doesn't have that same tour, like, doesn't have 21 days back to back.
Well, that's the tough part.
Boxing would be very tough if you're average.
I think boxing's probably the toughest
because you get hurt a lot.
You'd get emotionally
but if you're,
hurt.
If you're a world-class boxer who doesn't get hit much, opposite.
Yeah, I don't know.
Handy money.
I'd say it's mentally tough, though. Even in those camps leading up to fights.
Yeah.
You're by yourself. Like.
But everything's tough. They're all tough. I'm about to talk.
No, but like that's...
Everything's tough. I would say I'm gonna nail my colours
to the mast.
To the long-distance running people out there. Brutal.
Right.
Brutal.
Yeah.
If you go on one stag weekend, your training's back 5 weeks, I'd say.
Probably, but that's the same for any sport.
I'm telling you, marathon, there's nothing left out there, like, because you're on your own out there, you're in your head, you're wrecked, you could die.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. Very little, I would say, outside of the Olympics, very little recognition.
Yeah.
You have to really do it to love it.
Dave
and really love it to do
it. There's no way, like... If you're talking about danger, if you ever cycle down a mountain,
people die running marathons regularly.
Yeah,
we do disagree on that one. Triathlon, we'll make a compromise.
True.
Triathlon.
Dave says being a male footballer is a tough sport.
Yeah, that's up there. Yeah, mentally tough.
Shots fired by Dave this morning. Yeah, no, I'm up there with cyclists. I mean, it's obviously
you're up there with cyclists.
Yeah, I'm up there agreeing with you that cyclists are the toughest sports people. We're never going to agree on it, and there's no right answer or wrong answer. So that's the beauty of this conversation. Did you see? Well, we got one text on our message on this as well about the Meath GA song.
Oh,
see this?
Yeah, I heard it. Yeah.
So it's called "Hot for Meath." It's Chapel Rowan inspired. Donal Bowens, apologies if I pronounced that wrong, starring Kilmaine and Wood chairperson Richard Corbally, or Corbally again, apologies if I've butchered the pronunciation, but fair play, kudos for effort. Horrendous song. It's a horrendous song.
It's a cover of Hot to Go.
Yeah.
Chapel Row.
As in it gets into your bloodstream and you can't get it out. But I think that's half the point. I think that's half the crack of it. I'm not going to completely piss on the song here, but I mean, you know, as county songs go, it wouldn't be in.
I'd be interested now, right? If Meath go all the way, would it become iconic?
It probably, yeah, because
it's. Will they sing it in Croke Park?
Yeah, because it's tied to the success of it. So all the great sports songs, right, were they maligned initially and then over time became loved. So World Emotion, New Order, 1990 for England. great tune, like 35 years later.
True.
I wonder were people laughing at it when it came out.
Yeah.
Because the players sing in it. It's like Peter Beardsley in Gaza.
Yeah.
John Barnes has his rap. No, that's what they get John Barnes out to do now.
True.
Do the rap there, John.
Football's Coming Home is still maligned.
Football, yeah, but they sang that Wembley.
Yeah.
They sang it at Wembley, the fans. And up to that point, I wasn't sure if it was going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Jimmy's Winning Matches was, I don't think it was ever maligned. I think
I liked that. I actually liked that at the time, yeah. I remember singing that.
That was good.
In the club, yeah.
You didn't have to be from Donegal to like that song, I don't think.
No.
I like that song. What's the Cork? Well, Killers, obviously, the. I think everyone
that's
likes
an actual
Killa.
Artist like that. That's simple,
yeah, song, that, like, see, that's what like Limerick Hurling did well. Like the marketing was, just take someone else's actual song and just phone in.
Yeah.
And then so then like you know the Cranberries, 2018 and all that. The significance of the year for them overall.
Mm.
And then so that's what Limerick associated with. They don't have to come up with anything. Like,
yeah.
That's just you could. That's the easy way out. Like and take the an actual professional.
I always liked "Oh to Be a Rebel," in Cork. Yeah. I always thought that was a good song.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I always liked that.
Declan Ernie has a song, the Farnie Army song. It's a very good song, Monaghan. Check it out on Spotify.
Oh,
there are plenty others though.
There are others, yeah.
What's your favourite chant? GEA chant. This came up in the office now yesterday.
GEA is horrible for chants.
Yeah, it is. Aren't yeah. chants. That's kind of the point of conversation.
You just say your county's name. Da.
Yeah.
Or Calvin.
Tip.
Yeah, Tip is probably the most iconic one.
What's Monaghan's?
Monaghan. So three syllables.
Yeah, that's a lot of work for you.
A lot of work. Or Farney Army. Do. There's a few, like, do you know?
That's all right.
Yeah.
Pro ice hockey, they wear blades on their feet and can get punched out at any time. That's what I appreciate about hockey. It's like two sports in one, really.
Yeah.
You got to do a bit of skating. You got to do a bit of playing.
Yeah.
I went to see Boston Bruins in Boston. It's a vicious sport.
In Boston, right?
It's a vicious sport.
Yes.
They get halved and the refs do nothing about it.
Yeah,
like.
It's physical outside the fighting. Like.
The fighting's encouraged.
It's no more physical.
There'll
like
be
hurling, though. If we're going to put ice.
No, it is like the refs just stand back. I don't know what the refs are there for, to be honest. They're like Ryan O'Dwyer would love it.
Let's just box and.
They just start the game and just watch and skate along with them without getting hurt. But they're flaked up into the side of it. I'd say hockey now, but at least you can score a goal right there and get your adulation.
Yeah.
You can win the game, you can go home and you can celebrate together. And there's solidarity in collectively being beaten up.
Because it's a team sport.
Yeah.
Fergus makes the point, running a marathon is running a marathon. The Tour de France is a marathon every day for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I would go along with that one, Cullum. Yeah. I'm sorry to rain on your marathon parade. And I come from someone who's run a marathon, you know, not to bring it up. You know, I never would bring that up.
Can't tell us about that,
no, couldn't possibly. Oh, okay. 2015 Dublin Marathon, oh, very tough.
Very good.
Yeah, didn't really want to talk about it.
2015?
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
So you're retired?
10 years ago, I'm retired.
No, I'm still going to have marathon over Tour de France. I think you get a lot of... well, if we're talking about Tour de France specifically, not cycling in general, but...
We're talking about elite...
At least Tour de France, at least there's an adulation with that.
Mm.
At least you're among the greats. We're talking about Ben Healy now, you know?
Yeah. Dermot says sports presenting in your shorts has to be tough. I think it's tough enough.
It's easier.
It's an easy day.
Yeah. What makes the easiest would be what's the easiest sport to play? 0879 180 180.
WWE wrestling, brutal, 300 days a year, battering the body and the travel.
Yeah. And it's down to sports entertainment as well.
Yeah.
But, and also that, there's no give in that mat.
Yeah.
Mm.
That'll hurt you.
You're hitting that.
That'll hurt
hard.
You. Someone else says UFC, same thing as boxing. Like, if you're good at it, be grand. If you're average, toughest sport in the world. By far. Speaking of tough calls, Shane.
Mm.
Minding our own business this week and Christian Horner.
Yes. Interesting news, fascinating news.
I was on to you about it at the time.
Yeah.
You were somewhat surprised.
Surprised by it. Like, and then I'm seeing other people go, you know, potentially closer to the whole thing than I am in Formula One, saying, you know, kind of saw the writing on the wall, but still the timing of it felt surprising. Maybe you feel like this sort of thing is going to happen in the off season, but it hasn't. And then you see the video released, the next day, where you're seeing the farewell speech that he gave to the Red Bull staff, Christian Horner. Gets quite emotional towards the end of it as well. And obviously, like, he's been there a long time, 20 and a half years, I think, as he said himself. And he's been there from the outset. Like, just, he has gone through the amount of drivers with Red Bull he has gone through. Like, there are different moments where you thought, like, last year, obviously, the sexual harassment allegations came to light. Ultimately, he was cleared of those. And yet that left a taste for a lot of people. And people thought, if you're going to change team principle, maybe controversy like that is going to be the time to change a team principal. Adrian Newey then left in September for Aston Martin, who's their technical guru, was their technical mm-hmm. guru, and that was a massive departure for Red Bull. Their form hasn't been good this season. You know, Max Verstappen, you know, they're still probably the second best team, you would say, to McLaren, but they're certainly, McLaren have taken over as the righteous team at the top of the pile at the moment in Formula 1. It was kind of like the Dublin six in a row team there for a while with Red Bull. The dominance was getting a little bit boring after the previous dominance of Mercedes, which was probably a little bit boring. But now we've really got a fight in our hands, and I found it fascinating. Like, I'm trying to, like, what's Christian Horner's net worth? Just in terms of feeling sorry for the guy, his net worth is somewhere along the lines of £440 million.
This is very much like a manager sacking. This is like...
Sorry, that's the couple.
Sorry, where is he getting?
Jerry. He says he's only worth around 36
million.
Yeah,
Jerry's raking it in for them.
She brings it up to 440 million.
She getting mad royalties from Spice Girls.
Yeah, you must. Jesus, yeah, when you look at it that way.
You know what? I was at a wedding that took place in the gaff of the guy who directed the Spice Girls movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
And it was huge.
At a wedding in the house of the guy who directed the movie.
Yeah.
Right?
So... And it was massive.
Yeah. And it's massive. The Spice Girls. Is
if you direct the Spice Girls movie, you know the Spice Girls movie, do you remember it?
I didn't see it.
Out the peak of their power.
Yeah.
So Jerry Addy was making all that money now.
All of that money.
Jeez. She didn't write the songs though.
No, but if you are a Spice Girl.
How would you make the money? Yeah. That's amazing to me. Because I was wondering where's Horner getting half a bill from nearly? Where's he getting that from?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's worth $440 million.
Well, they've done like a reunion tour, haven't they?
That was a while ago, though, I thought.
Ah, but you'd make so much money off that.
She's let us know about that. 087-918-180. Yeah. How does Jerry make all her money?
That's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
And because Horner, because I was thinking, that's an out. Like, there's money switching around in F1, but not to that extent. Anyway, what will the boy do now? Will he be recruited? Or is he bad news?
I don't think he's bad news. That experience is obviously going to come in use somewhere, you would imagine.
Punditry.
I think he'd be really good as a pundit. Yeah. Like, and you can hear him over the radio and stuff. He speaks very eloquently as well. And anyone who's seen Drive to Survive will kind of go along those lines. And maybe he doesn't need to go into anything. Like when you've that much money sitting at home. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see if this affects whether Max Verstappen stays with the team or not. Laurent Mickey is taking over as CEO as well. Kind of been coming up through the ranks, but he even seemed surprised that this all has happened so quickly. That's a fascinating one. And it just felt, look, there's probably some infighting that's gone on behind the scenes. We don't know, but usually when something like this happens, and that's been reported that maybe there was a little bit of politics at the top, and people stop getting along at the top of these massive organisations, then decisions have to be made, and they've made one. Surprising, but look, sympathies at a low ebb for Christian Horner. He's doing okay. He's fine. But yeah, big story in Formula 1. Wimbledon, Cullum. It's big news yesterday with Aryna Sabalenka's exit. You've been obviously following this closely. That one took, I think, a lot of people by surprise.
Very much so. Amanda Anisimova, the American, so she's Russian parents. They moved over before she was born. She's only 23. Really interesting career. So she's 13th seed, so no mug, like. But I think she only has about 3 career titles in total, has never gone beyond a quarter final of a Grand Slam previously. Her only other quarter final appearance actually was back in 2019 when she was a teenager. She got to Roland Garros last 8. And then about 3 or 4 months later, her dad suddenly died of a heart attack. And that really took its toll on her. But it was kind of a delayed reaction. So in 2023, the May of that year, she took a break from tennis, mental health break, and didn't come back till the following January. So the start of last year. And she's, I guess, a new player since then. But Aryna Sabalenka was definitely favourite to win this tournament. We talked about it yesterday with Jenny Claffey about what is happening with the women at Wimbledon the last 10 years. There's always a different winner and it's rarely a star of the game. And this was set up nicely for Sabalenka. I wouldn't say she blew it. I think Anisimova won this match herself, which was seen in the winner because she's strong on her backhand and her forehand and she won it with the forehand. So Sabalenka was outraged. People were waiting for her to blow up in the press conference. She didn't. She's kind of self-aware of what happened after the French Open final against Coco Gauff, where she said that she said herself she lost it rather than Coco Gauff winning it. So she didn't say that this time. She was more gracious, but it's the third semi-final she's lost at Wimbledon, and pound for pound she is the best player in the world. So it's an underperformance there, but a brilliant display by Anisimova. And in the other semi-final, which was the second one, I was worried that it's going to be another upset here, which means another final between two players that wouldn't be that well widely known. So Belinda Bencic played Iga Świątek. Bencic has won an Olympic gold medal, to be fair to her, and she took a break after going on maternity leave. So she's back now as a mother in the game, which is happening increasingly. But Świątek destroyed her. Bencic was injured. She had a toe problem. And Świątek won two in love, which is seismic for a semi-final of Wimbledon. Happens rarely. So now Iga Świątek is into her first Wimbledon final. She's reached five Grand Slam finals to date and has won all five, albeit four of those are at the one event, the French Open, but she's also won the US Open. So that'll be your women's final tomorrow. And then today you have Jannik Sinner against Novak Djokovic in the first semi-final, and then Carlos Alcaraz against Taylor Fritz.
Yeah, they're interesting enough. Huge, semi-finals, yeah. In fairness.
Massive, because like Sinner had this injury against Grigor Dimitrov in a match. He was very fortunate to win because Dimitrov had to retire injured in the third set, being two sets up. He had an MRI on the elbow that he injured Sinner, but he was good to go and beat Ben Shelton in straight sets. Ben Shelton's a very good player. Meanwhile, Djokovic, he keeps losing first sets. So he lost his first set the last time out to Flavio Cabali, the young Italian, who used to play for Roma in the academy.
Oh.
Very accomplished.
Fun fact.
But eventually he won in four sets. That's what he does at Wimbledon, Djokovic. He's done it in finals of Wimbledon where he loses the first set quite comfortably and then wins the next three. But I think if he loses the first set, Shane, to Jannik Sinner today, he's in deep trouble.
Right.
Deep, deep trouble. And then as for Carlos Alcaraz, he's won the last two Wimbledons, beaten Djokovic in the last two finals. He plays Taylor Fritz, who 3 years ago lost to Nadal in a five-set classic, and then Nadal wasn't able to play the semi-final because he was injured, which gave Nick Kyrgios a bye into the final. So he wants revenge for that, I'd imagine. There'll be two good semi-finals, I'd say, but ultimately you'd imagine it's going to be Jannik Sinner versus Carlos Alcaraz final.
You'd imagine.
But I thought it was going to be Sabalenka against Świątek as well. So.
Yeah, anything can happen. I haven't verified this stat, but All in the Game says we'll be the ninth different female Wimbledon runner in a row.
Runner. We're on a theme of marathons.
True. I'm not sure what he means there. Ninth different female
Wimbledon
finalist.
So the last player to retain Wimbledon was Serena Williams in 2016.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah. And the only star of the game to win it since then was Ash Barty 4 years ago. And Ash Barty was briefly a star, but then she retired, of course, really young.
Jesus, yeah.
So other than that, look at the last three winners. You know, Barbora Krejcikova, who was a great of the game, but wouldn't be well known. Elena Rybakina, Markéta Vondrousova, all like good players. If you're a fan of tennis, you'll know them.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it would have no dent in the game at all. It's fascinating, because on the men's side, it's the favourites generally win it. Or one of the favourites.
Interesting. Yeah. Jesus, yeah.
The Sabalenka semi-final yesterday with Anisimova was a brilliant match, by the way. It was fantastic.
She finds it tough to take defeats, Rina Sabalenka. I'm not saying that's a negative. Obviously, if you're a born winner, that's a...
I suppose she's working on her charm. Like, can you work on your charm? I suppose you can. You can get training on it, or you can just have a bit of self-reflection.
Like, you two lads don't need to work on your charm.
Just take a deep breath, you know?
I love when an athlete is honest and a presser.
And she
can't go after
their opponent. That's it, isn't it?
You can't discredit.
It's funny because she's authentic, so she would say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong and therefore I should be loved. I think the problem that people have with Sabalenka is that she grunts really loudly.
Yeah, it is.
And people can't stand that. And she grunts loudly.
It's overkill.
They did a scale of it there during the week. And the thing is that she elongates her screams when she hits the ball. So the ball is approaching the net and she's still letting out her last gasp. So it's distracting players. It's funny, like, because if she hit the ball in silence and then grunted, she'd be tempting a disqualification. But it's totally acceptable to grunt when you hit the ball because you can never prove that it's voluntary.
This is a controversial topic that's gone.
It is. I think people have a huge problem with it. They probably have more of a problem when it's women doing it.
Yeah,
I would say.
Why?
I don't know. I suppose it's like that's probably like sexism thing. It's probably like the pitch of it, yeah, and all that. But it's generally, I think it's more unpalatable for people in that regard. And I just think people can't stand it. But like, it is really loud. The same problem with Maria Sharapova.
Yeah.
And I think then you have to work backwards with your charm and really convince people that you're a fun-loving, nice person if you're grunting that loudly. I think that's the problem people have with Sabalenka. And like you say, she turned on Coco Gauff after she lost the French Open final. And Coco Gauff's one of her buddies. So people didn't like that either. But she was self-aware enough to apologise for it, both publicly and privately to Gauff. They're reportedly on good terms again. And she was self-aware enough to know yesterday in a press conference to say you're not going to get the same version of the French Open.
I like that, yeah.
So she, like, obviously you're dealing with a good person here ultimately.
Yeah.
But I think she does polarise people, yeah.
I love the way Google looks after us when we're looking for information on loudest ever tennis grunters.
Yeah.
Describes Victoria Azarenka's as compared to an owl hooting. Maria Sharapova's, she's reached 101 decibels before she's been measured at, which is comparable to a motorcycle or a chainsaw, apparently, in terms of decibel levels. 101 decibels. Others, Rafa Nadal, obviously, Michelle Larcher de Brito is mentioned here as one of the loudest.
At what point does it become a disqualification? Not a disqualification, but a point.
I don't know if a player was ever told to stop.
Quiet it down there.
By the umpire, but it would have to be the umpire.
Right.
And you can never, you can never prove it. You can never prove that they're doing it on purpose. Mm-hmm. It's a grey area. I don't think it'll ever be fixed. Unless you totally outlaw it and you start deducting points.
Yeah.
But that would be draconian to say the least.
Alcaraz is pretty bad himself now as well. And the Vamos, is that okay? Can he do that?
I mean, I suppose whatever language you want to say, come on, it works out. I think it's acceptable, but I think the unwritten rule is don't do it in the direction of your opponent.
So he turns away, doesn't he?
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Just reading here. So Monica Seles, Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe are generally considered to be the grunt creators in the women's and men's games.
Right.
Djokovic has changed his grunt and lessened it as his career progressed, apparently. Although hindrance from Djokovic's grunting earned Sinner a point in the semi-finals of 2023.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Mm.
And there was uproar over that.
That's mad. That doesn't happen too often.
That's right. Hindrance. I remember watching that live because it was delayed. It was too long after the shot was hit.
Mm.
And he went mad. He went mental when he got a hindrance call.
2009 French
Sinner, and Sinner doesn't make a peep either. Yeah. So it always makes you seem even louder again. Because Sinner doesn't say a word. Yeah, like nothing comes out of him at all.
Yeah. That's mad. 2009 French Open, Arivan Rezaei complained to the umpire about Michelle Larcher de Brito shrieking, and then a Grand Slam supervisor was brought to the court. No action taken, but then she was booed off the court. And afterwards, Martina Navratilova said it was a form of cheating, the grunting. It's controversial. I'm telling you this topic. Grunting in tennis.
Yeah. For grunt's sake, grunting hell.
Yeah, there you go.
Some great comments there coming in.
That's fantastic comments, Cullen.
And Pats won last night. St. Pats in Europe.
They did.
1-0 in the Conference League qualifier first leg.
Should have won by more, by all accounts.
Penalty by Aidan Keeney. Yeah, this wasn't on TV. It was on Sports Pass, streaming service. That was the only way we were going to be able to watch this, but...
So Hegelman with the opposition Lithuanian team.
Lithuania, yeah. So, 2-1 wins for Republic of Ireland, Irish sides this week in Europe.
It's the result that matters.
Absolutely.
In European football. Yeah, I saw a video yesterday of, was it 10 years ago? UCD got a famous win in Europe over a Scandinavian team. Was it one of the Swedish teams? And I was just watching the highlights back. Brilliant game. Brilliant result. The... Rugby, we should mention with you, Dara, as well, what have you. How do you feel about the Lions / Ireland at the minute? I know it's two different questions.
Jamie Osborne.
Yesterday was, I wouldn't say surprising, but I'd say a lot of people were surprised. I wasn't particularly surprised, but Blair Kinghorn went for an e-scan there yesterday, came back with good news, but he will be out for a certain amount of time. They didn't mention how much. Imagine like a week or so, maybe. May miss the first test. So decide to call in a bit of cover for him. And they've gone with Jamie Osborne, who's not a fullback.
But can do it.
But can play it there for
sure.
So
he was named in the Ireland side initially to play Portugal tomorrow at second centre.
Yeah, at 13, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. You asked me why Blair Murray wasn't picked.
Yeah.
Or someone like that. I'd imagine it's to do with the Andy Farrell is familiar with Jamie Osborne in a setup, knows what he's getting.
This is the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the problem.
But listen, when someone's coming in for cover, though, you know what type of trainee he is. Blair Murray, Andy Farrell doesn't know the guy. He might be a bad, you know, training guy.
He doesn't probably know the guy, but his job isn't his job as the Lions head coach to pick the best available players, and it's Andy Farrell's responsibility to get to know the person.
To pick the players he thinks.
Because the comfort zone is to always pick the players that you know.
It's a mix of who will fit in best, who's going to benefit the environment the most and play well. But he probably won't play. So, like, you know, I can see why he'd pick an Irish player. Maybe slightly surprised he didn't pick Jimmy O'Brien, who's been playing fullback for Ireland.
Yeah.
Or even just someone that's an out and out fullback. But Jamie Osborne is a class player. He doesn't stand out or it doesn't seem out of place in a Lions squad at all, I don't think. I'm sure he'll be on the next one as an initial selection. It is interesting though. You'd like to see him play a game. He probably, it's unlikely he will, but maybe there's a couple more injuries before the next game now, which is tomorrow. So probably not.
Geez, you're breaking it tomorrow, aren't you? Playing in this last Lions game before the first test.
Yeah.
And it's a good combined Australia-New Zealand 15.
Yeah.
It's not too
good.
Bad.
Like,
it's probably,
you could argue it to be their toughest test so far out of all the warm-up games, second to Argentina. But like, you want to go and you have to make an impression. You're a week out. There's probably only a handful that are certainties to start, probably.
Yeah.
For the other 10 or so, and anyone else comes off the bench, you have to give it your all. But Jesus, like, do you put out a bit? Even subconsciously, do you put out a bit because you're a week away from the first test?
I would say a lot of the players there are a bit disappointed that they're in this team. I'd say a lot of them are thinking, okay, I'm not in the test team. So this is...
It is interesting, right? The only thing you'd say, it's a week out, so maybe. But like we're talking about the toughest sports, the recovery, I'd say, from your standard rugby game at that level must be pronounced. But then you get used to it.
Yeah.
So maybe you're grand by Monday, arguably, let's say. But the game's Saturday night. So say Monday night for them, you're grand. And then you have, what, 4 days out to the first test. You might be okay.
Yeah.
Might not be the end of the world if you start this weekend.
No, it's doable. Six Nations, you sometimes a week turnaround.
But it is, because if he picks a side that doesn't play in the first test, that means the first test side really won't have played together that much.
Yeah.
You could argue it was the Brumbies match.
Game, that was it, yeah.
But that's the 10 days out and they only played once and they weren't that cohesive.
Yeah.
But that's what's always going to happen on Lions tour, because you're never going to play like roughly the same team all the time. That's not going to happen. So therefore, first test, you're really only getting to know each other in the first test.
Yeah.
No wonder it always often goes to the third test.
True. We will preview this game further with Alan Quinnan just after 8:30 or so this morning on OTB Breakfast with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.